Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in his province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by Face First Medical Aesthetics in Regina above Gabo's on Dewdney Avenue. By Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan and David Dubé in the Concord Group of Companies. By our friends at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Check out Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn and Corey Zadarozniak. By Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Get in the real estate game with the three-time Grey Cup champ by giving him a call at 306-502-5355. By SAS Selects Football, building the gridiron stars of tomorrow today. By Mark Greshner Photography. Check out his awesome work at markgreshner.com. And our homegrown segment is brought to you by Riviere Ag Seeds, Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified durum yellow peas and chickpeas. Riviere Ag Seeds, located in Radville with Paul Riviere and his great family. In our homegrown segment here on Growing the Game with Ballsy, installment 226, we've talked to this guy before on the podcast, but not in a situation like this where he umpired Major League Baseball playoffs, and he did that for the first time ever. It's Stu Sherwater from Regina, the only Canadian Major League Baseball umpire right now and a former Regina Thunder football player. How did you find that, my friend?
It was phenomenal, Ballsy. I tell you, it's a whole new animal being out there. It's just a different atmosphere between the players, us. I know there wasn't a crowd for us, but there's something about the hype up, the pressure, everything about it. It's something else. It's something you can't really explain.
Really, it was a different season, and you had that heightened intensity for the whole season. You had a little bit of COVID incidents off and on, but I thought Major League Baseball, after the initial surge, did a great job of, you know, meandering its way through and getting us to the playoff bubble. But it was a sprint right from the start of the season, Stu. Did you feel that when you were umping?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. They all knew, players, us. We knew there were 60 games. They knew that every game meant something. You don't have 162 games. You can't just, not saying they give away a game here and there, but little simple mistakes, one or two games in a 60-game schedule could cost a big thing for a team. And we knew that going in, too. So we felt it off the bat. We saw the ejections were up even early because the teams knew that there's going to be a little bit more pressure all around for them to get to the playoffs, too.
Yeah, so what was it like for you? Take us behind the curtain here of the regular season and playoffs in terms of your daily routine, getting tested, all that type of stuff.
Well, I would say that they weren't kept at all. That was one of the biggest things as the umpire, I guess, guys that I hang out with. And we're all creatures of habit, like a lot of sports athletes are as well. So we have routines. You have certain things you like to do to take your mind off things before the game, pregame stuff, just a way to relax after games. And that's just all bumping out the window. I'm not one to sit in my room, play video games or any of that kind of stuff. I'm a get out in the cities, grab a cup of coffee, go walk the cities, go grab a nice lunch somewhere, relax, maybe come back to my room mid-afternoon, maybe after a workout or something, kind of get something off your mind. And then you go to the ballpark and then then it's game time. And get your head into it. But this year, it was heavily, looked bad upon to be going out to restaurants, of course, being exposed in public. Especially, I was in a lot of the hotbeds in the United States, all the big states that were getting COVID hit hard, the New Yorks, the Floridas, in Massachusetts. So I got, I didn't want to go out either. That's the other thing, too. So I'm one to never, ever order like room service, and you're forced to. And it was I am not a fan of room service. I'd rather go out and grab my lunch, go sit at a table. But these strange times, you got to do what you got to do to stay healthy for yourself, your family, the people in the game of baseball. We don't want to be the one to bring it down, so you want to make sure that you did your part out there as well.
Yeah. You go into the playoffs, you get right away, it's the best of three, I guess, and you're right into it with the Cincinnati and Atlanta, and the first game is a 13-inning game that's scoreless through the whole ball game. What's that like for you as an umpire? I watched that entire game. Just talk about the emotions and things that you go through, because you're a human. You're human. You're not a robot, even though it looks like they want to try to replace you guys with robots. But what's it like for you behind the plate in a tight game like that, the tension inning after inning, no score?
Yeah, that's my second game in my major league career. My second year, my call-up, I had a 0-0 game going to the bottom of the ninth. It was between Boston and Tampa. I think Tampa ended up scoring around the bottom of the ninth. I've never gone extra innings with 0-0, let alone 13, in my first ever playoff game. Not really ideally how I pictured my first playoff game. A, behind the plate. B, going 13 innings without a run scored, meaning if the pitchers do. And I knew going in, you got two Cy Young candidates going in with, you know, Fried and Bauer. So you got these two guys, you know, that can throw. So I knew it's going to be a pitching duel no matter what. But you think somebody's going to get – both these teams are very talented offensively too. So that for nobody to score a run was something else. And just, you know, all I had to do was just take it one pitch at a time. All I could do was control what I'm calling that one. And, you know, whatever that was, the 4.5, 5 hours that I was out there just calling balls and strikes, it was something that I had to keep reminding myself, just one pitch at a time. Doesn't matter what the last one was. You know, just right to the next one. Got to get the next one right. Got to get the next one right. So yeah, that's pretty much my mindset through that whole game, and just, you know, just letting your instincts and your natural talent that, you know, I believe I have to just run me through that game and the preparation I have to get me through that game.
How did you grade out in that game in the end?
You know what? I didn't even look because the playoffs is that we don't get our scores, you know, but personally, I think I did very well. I didn't hear much from the benches, and I had a couple buddies that were watching every pitch too, and they all thought it was a very well done game. And you know, I could just go off of myself, and you could tell when you have a good game, bad game, and I thought it was a pretty good one.
Do you, like, they scout you guys, you know, in the world of analytics, especially in baseball, they know what crew does this and what umpire is likely to call this and where a strike zone is. Do you self-scout the pitchers like a Bauer and those kind of guys just to know what kind of pitches they pitch? Because, I mean, you got to have great eyesight, but almost like the batter, you almost got to anticipate what's coming too, I would think, unless I'm wrong.
You're absolutely right. I think that just comes with reputation. We don't have anything gimmicks where, you know, they've tried to incorporate or, you know, virtual reality. People have come to our group and said, we need to put you in front of these, and they put us in these head goggles, and it's nothing compared to what we actually see in game. I think it just comes with experience. I had Fried, actually, I think two or three times this year. So I've seen him, you know, multiple times. So that kind of helped. I didn't have Bauer this year because I was more on the East Coast when he was definitely in the Central in Cincinnati. I had him before. We all know he's got very good breaking ball stuff. So you just got to be ready for it. I think it just comes with experience and, you know, time. Just to almost have a little bit better time and sit back and wait for that pitch to finish and not get too antsy. Even though it's a playoff game, you don't want to be the guy to, you know, call strike three a little too quick and it drops off the table and hits the dirt or something, trades like that.
Yeah, so Clayton Kershaw finally wins, and it turns the whole narrative on his career. Like, he's now going to go down as one of the greatest pitchers without any type of argument. They can't say he didn't win the big one, wasn't part of a winner. What's it like to call a game with Clayton Kershaw, for example?
Yeah, he's a very talented individual. There's no doubt about it. I was on the East Coast. We're kind of regionalized this year. So I never did see him in a game, but last year I had him twice, you know, when we actually were traveling all over the country, and he's a phenomenal. He's where he is for a reason, how long he's pitched for that long for a reason. He's good at what he does. You're no doubt about that. So he's a very talented individual. There's no doubt about that.
Joining me here is Stu Sherwater for a couple of more minutes. Regina-born umpire who was in the playoffs this year in a bubble situation. What's it like to ump when there are no fans in the stands? Is it better or worse for you?
It doesn't have the same feel. Again, when the playoffs come around, you know, there's no fans, but definitely those cameras, there's a lot of them out there too, and you know there's a lot of fans watching. So you don't have the roar, the intensity of the crowd. But the same pressure of the game, the players treated the same. They were still getting into it. You know, there's a lot at stake. So, and to tell the truth, when there's EA's fans and it's a tight game, let's say in the ninth or something, and it gets you kind of tune them out. My position, you don't hear it. I don't feed off the fans. You know, after maybe a strike three in the roar, kind of you feel it. But there's no doubt about that. But it's something that doesn't get me going or change my game as a fan. But it was weird. You know, walking into an empty stadium, you got these 50,000 seats, just empty, a bunch of cardboard cutouts of people's faces and stuff. It was something else. And hopefully we won't have to do it again. Just never know. And again, only time will tell. But it's a strange time we're in, and we just had to do what we had to do to get that season in and playoffs in, so people could watch some baseball and get some entertainment.
Did your dad, Doug, or your mom buy a cardboard cutout of themselves to have behind the plate, or did you see it? Did you see any of? Did you see them, or did you see any that made you laugh out loud?
And everybody is as it was this, but no, I didn't get my parents any cardboard cutouts. They didn't offer it to us. But I guess they had some ballparks were doing some neat things. If you're in the outfield, if the ball hits you, they would keep track and that person would get that ball. I guess I don't know how it was exactly how they did it. Now they have people wandering the stadiums that work there, but so that was kind of neat. They were doing that, but a lot of the players, the teams had their families and dogs and stuff like that. And like one whole section was just dogs. I don't know why it just was. It was something else, but so definitely not people yelling at you, that's for sure.
So I'm not gonna, my last question, I don't mean to think you're, to suggest you're cocky or anything like that. That's not what I mean. But after this foray in the playoffs, strange as it was, do you feel like you've arrived? Like, do you feel like a full-time Major League Baseball umpire now that you've been through that experience?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ballsy. It's something that I think every game you complete is a big accomplishment. So let alone now doing playoffs and just another step, that's something, my very first goal is to get hired. And then once you're hired, you're already in there. Now what's your next goal? To do playoffs. Now it's going to be higher in the playoffs. And now it's going to be, eventually a World Series. So it's a goal setting thing as well. And confidence, there is a borderline of confidence and cocky. And I think in my profession, you need to have a little bit of both. But I need to be, by doing a playoff situation, I think you need to have that confidence and build that confidence by going out there and knowing you've done a playoff game and, you got through, you survived, and hopefully there's more to come sooner than later.
I'll tell you what, man, you've come a long way from your time with Ben Hebert on the Regina Thunder and from the Ball Diamonds in Regina to now in the Major Leagues of Baseball, man. It's a pleasure talking to you, and definitely cool that you waved the Canadian flag from little old Regina in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely, Baldy. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, this month I've been growing a mustache for the first time ever in my life. It looks terrible, but it's for a good cause. Movembers, we're trying to raise not only awareness, but money going towards mental health, the mental health of men who don't usually do a good job of maintaining their health or regularly going to a doctor. They keep a lot of their emotions inside. Mental health, although it's getting better, it's still kind of an issue that's not really easily talked about by men. How they're feeling, their emotions, their stresses. I got this Facebook message from a mother whose son I coached in both peewee and bantam football, and she said she'd like me to pass this along. So I will pass it along, not using her name, but using his first name. He went on Facebook and recently talked about the addictions and the struggles he's going through, and she wanted me to bring this up as kind of a sounding board so that other kids who are going through stuff don't feel like they have to keep it inside, and other families too. Hi, Michael. Thanks for reaching out and asking about Josh and for the encouraging words to Josh. I don't mean to be long-winded, but I have to say the last 3 years have been utter hell. That'd be an understatement, actually. Watching Josh diminish and fall so far so fast was one of the hardest things we've ever had to witness. I would go through my heart failure 1,000 times over to have been able to save him from this and all he's been through. We denied it for a long time, hoping to wish it away and will him to get back on his feet and get back on track on his own. When we realized it was beyond him, we pushed and pushed to get him help, knowing that he had to want to get help for himself. We struggled with the stigma as much as he did, and we all tried to keep it a private, immediate family secret and saw it as shameful and embarrassing. Although reflecting on it now, we know a lot of his peers probably already knew. When addiction gets bigger than you, it is a monster to try to contain. Josh half-heartedly went to counseling, I think mostly to appease us. With all of his potential and such successes in football, seeing those dreams and goals fail, then quitting university, I think he felt pretty hopeless with not much more to lose or care about, so the addiction got worse. Dale and I reached out for help, not only for Josh, but for ourselves, meeting with a couple of people who have traveled the same road, the addictions road. Well, I can tell you, addiction does not discriminate, and we are slowly starting to not blame ourselves as parents, although it feels like a major failure on our part. With the isolation of COVID, and after watching the addictions crisis in our province and in our city alone, we finally didn't care who knew, who judged us. Our number one focus was saving our son's life until he was ready to save it himself. Getting him help smack dab in the middle of COVID was challenging as the treatment centers were not deemed essential, so we waited and feared the worst until they were open again in September. Can you imagine that? Josh spent 28 days at Pine Lodge in Indian Head, and then after a week home in between went to Calgary to Fresh Start, where he is now until late February or March. Now, I wouldn't normally share this much, but I've known you for a long time, trusted you with my son when you coached him. You've got a large circle in the city and beyond and have a platform to let people know about these issues. Michael, thanks for reaching out. Feel free to share this with your son, Ethan, and feel free for you and Ethan to share this with other people. So that's what I'm doing here on this podcast. And here are some numbers that are really staggering. I know COVID's a deal, and I'm not diminishing that, but we make a big deal about COVID-19 and all the deaths. But check this out, okay? We don't do this very much. We've had 3,000 overdoses in Saskatchewan alone this year since the beginning of January. Over 300 deaths in the province, a death a day in Saskatchewan. 82 deaths in Regina so far in 2020. It's just heartbreaking in our community. In fact, we had three guys in their 30s recently in one night die from an overdose of fentanyl. So I'm definitely on board with trying to do what I can, even if it means growing a cheesy mustache. If you're struggling or you know someone is struggling, make sure you reach out. Make sure you check on them. And hey, like I said, if you're struggling, make sure you reach out because there's no shame in anything. We're all in this together.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.